Welcome to The Frenzy.
I'm Melissa Carter.
And I'm Jen Hobby. The Frenzy's mission is to celebrate friendships over 40.
We believe that women can thrive through authentic relationships, self-discovery, and spiritual exploration.
Our decades-long friendship continues to grow because we are willing to go there and share our truths through life's highs and lows.
That's why The Frenzy is here, to hold space for women who are 40 and older, because at this age, your story matters more than ever. I'm Melissa, and I just volunteered to be a room mother for my son's first grade class.
Yay! Room moms unite! Neither one of us have ever done that, and we're both doing it this year.
Both doing it. So that's crazy, right? But you had told me that you were doing it, and then they didn't have a second. And so I was like, all right, I'll do it. So yes, room mom, here I am.
That is so awesome.
We're going to have to do a segment on room mother confessions
and etiquette
later in the year. Yes.
So we know how to deal. That is awesome. I'm Jen. And back in high school, I was a cheerleader and never could get a back handspring.
Really?
Yeah, man. I tried for years.
Are you still allowed to be a cheerleader without doing a back handspring?
Well, at my little private school, they just needed people to show up and turn out and put on the outfit. I mean, I don't know that I had to be really good to be a cheerleader at my school.
I tried for
so many years to get a back handspring. I mean, I went to a gymnastics gym late at night, took classes years. I'm telling you, Melissa Carter, never did get it.
Well, I admire anybody that can do that stuff. I could never. I can't even do a front flip, back flip, nothing like that.
In the pool. I can do one in the pool.
I don't even know if I've ever done a flip in the pool.
Well, now we got a new goal.
Exactly. Melissa, it's okay for you to go upside down. All right. Well, coming up on today's episode, we're talking food. We're not talking flips. Our relationship with food, of course, can be one of the most important ones in our lives. And food wrapped up in all of our stories. It's who we are. It's where we're from. And we can't wait to share our food memories with you.
Plus, you'll meet Virginia Willis. She is Georgia-born and French-trained. She is a chef who is the talent and chef instructor for the digital streaming platform Food Network Kitchen. She has authored 6 wonderful cookbooks, including Lighten Up, Y'all, which won a James Beard Foundation Award of Excellence. Virginia has appeared on Food Network's Chopped, CBS This Morning, Martha Stewart Living, just to name a few, and as a judge on Throwdown with Bobby Flay. You are going to love her culinary industry stories. She's got some good stories.
Yes.
And the insights into her kitchen that you can apply to your own. Have you subscribed to the Frenzy podcast yet? Please do and leave us a review. It is big, big news for us. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you are listening to podcasts.
And if you enjoy this episode of The Frenzy, please share it with a friend. We would love for more women like you to find out about our show. So, Jen, we are going to dive into our conversation with Virginia Willis here in a minute. But first, let us thank our sponsors.
Just heard your friend, neighbor, or colleague has been diagnosed with cancer? Your first instinct is, what can I do? Kick It Pajamas is the answer. Kick It sells pajamas, gowns, and other accessories specifically designed for those going through cancer treatment. Go to kickitpajamas.com and use the code FRENZY to get 10% off. That's kickitpajamas.com, code FRENZY for 10% off. Give the gift of comfort and style. Kick It Pajamas. Let's kick cancer off the planet.
Hey, it's Melissa. My family has a history of vascular disease, so I make a point to get my vascular system checked through Lifeline screening each year. The health of your arteries is important and is critical to understand your risk of stroke and cardiovascular disease. With a simple preventative screening, I get peace of mind or early detection so that I can take action. Since 1993, Lifeline Screening's highly experienced staff has screened over 10 million people in order to bring awareness to potential health problems for follow-up with your physician. To find out more, go to lifelinescreening.com. That's lifelinescreening.com, and be sure to use the code FRIENDS. That's frenzy without the Y, so that's FRIENDZ.
Okay, friends, we are thrilled to introduce you to today's guest, a chef who has made chocolate chip cookies with Dwayne the Rock Johnson, foraged for berries in the Alaskan wilderness, and hunted for truffles in France. Ladies, please help us welcome our wildly talented friend, Virginia Willis. Virginia Willis, welcome to the Frenzy.
Thank you so much for having me.
We are so excited to have you. Virginia is Georgia-born and French-trained. She is a chef with Food Network Kitchen. She specializes in chef-inspired recipes for home cooks. Was also the celebrity chef at the mansion at Churchill Downs for the Kentucky Derby. She's cooked for the James Beard Foundation for celebrities like Morgan Freeman, Jane Fonda, and Bill Clinton. Check this out. She's also the author of about 1,000 cookbooks. Okay.
Feels like it.
My favorite is Lighten Up, Y'all. Okay. Virginia is also the former TV kitchen director for Martha Stewart Living, Bobby Flay, and so many more. She's been featured in the New York Times, Washington Post, People Magazine, just to name a few. And I could go on and on.
Not to interrupt, but Virginia, when do you get to the point where you stop saving the clippings? Like when you're like, you know what? I've been everywhere. So I just, you know what? I don't have to, back in the day, I don't have to record that VHS anymore. I don't have to keep that because I'm everywhere.
Oh, well, mama always wants to hear about it, right? So oh, I may as well.
That's right.
Good Southern girl. Go. That's right. Yeah.
Well, Virginia and I met a million years ago on the set of Turner South, and I have been a diehard fan ever since.
Back at you.
And I just have always learned so much from you. So I want to start kind of back in the beginning so everybody can get to know you a little bit better. Where did your love for food and cooking get started?
Oh, gosh. I have been in the kitchen my whole entire life. I don't have any photographs of it, but there are tales of my grandmother's double-sided steel sink. And she would put the beans or the peas or the butter beans in one side of it and then put me in the other. Right. As a toddler. So that's literally like practically born in a kitchen. It's been a part of my life and my heart and my soul, my whole entire life.
I love that. Awesome. Here's my perspective. We're just going to be honest up front. So Jen is really good in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Okay. Melissa is not. My mother, Millie Pete, God rest her soul. When you said that, I remember growing up snapping beans with her, newspapers in the lap, snapping the beans. She cooked every meal, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner was all homemade in my house all growing up. I'm not sure how I didn't go down that route, but I will say that she would also bake all my birthday cakes from scratch. And so that's what I picked up on. And so what's funny is my son is now, he's about to turn 7. And so when my son was born, I'm an old mama. I thought, you know what? I want to keep up that tradition. I want to bake his cakes because she taught me how to bake because that's what I was interested in. So then I've been baking ever since. So I guess my question is, for people who were insecure in the kitchen, is there a difference between baking and cooking, or can you be good at both?
So that's a great question. And I think that there's definitely a difference. And I also think it's possible to be better at one or the other. And it's also easy to be, not easy, it's also possible to be good at both of them, right? I think that baking for some folks can be easy because it's like very specific instructions. You do this, 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 and this, and you will get this, right? And if someone is following a good recipe, a well-written recipe, a well-tested recipe, then you got a high chance of success. With some more savory cooking and not baking and pastry, it can be a little bit more free form, right? And so, for example, like this tomato may be more ripe and it's going to break down and cook more quickly than this other tomato, which is a little bit more firm. And so that's why you'll see a recipe that says like, you know, saute for 3 to 5 minutes. Well, someone that's an intense baker might be, well, is it 3 or is it 5? Right?
Like
that's a 2 minute difference. What are you talking about? But baking, I think baking, because of the science behind it, is a fairly precise means of cooking. And so it definitely has its appeal to people that are more into the precision of it.
Virginia, I think you've come up with a great personality test.
Like
Jen and I, so like I said, Jen is a great cook. And so
I don't know about great cook. I would just say I love it. I really enjoy doing it. It's a stress relieving activity for me. Whereas I think for Melissa, it's a stress inducing activity.
Yes.
And
I think that our personalities show that. I do think that Jen is far more flexible than I am. And I'm the rigid.
Well, gosh, anytime you love something and you I know Jen loves to cook, right? So I just see it. And so anytime you love something, you bring that joy to it. I think it shows up on the plate.
Can you tell the difference when you go somewhere to a restaurant or when you eat someone else's food, if they love doing it or not?
Not necessarily from the flavor of the food, although there's an interesting sort of like reply to that. A lot of times I'll ask folks like, do you like to cook? And so often the response is, well, I can't cook. And I'm like, well, that wasn't what I asked you. I didn't ask you if you could cook or not, right? I asked you if you like to, because I think it's just like anything, you know, if you like to play golf, you're going to have more interest in it. You're going to get out there on the course. You're going to practice your putting. You're going to realize that mistakes happen and you just like pick up and move on. For people that are more intimidated by things, like, I mean, I haven't played golf since my first girlfriend, right? Not my thing. You know what I mean? And so I think it just depends on their stress level, like, right? If you're at someone's house and they're all stressed out about it, then it's probably not their thing. Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious, have you gone to a friend's house or someone's house and there was something in their kitchen that you absolutely either adored or you want to throw out yourself without the, even if they didn't notice you doing it?
Like food?
Or utensils. It could be anything. I mean, something they use to cook. Probably that's what I was thinking more of is like things in their drawers or hanging on their wall.
Honey, there are some stuff I have seen in people's kitchen that does not belong at a fish camp. I am not kidding.
Do tell.
I mean, there is a woman who I know who I went to college with who is from a very, very old, wealthy, prominent Southern family. And she did some cookies of mine and she took a picture of the cookies and sent them to me. And I immediately texted her back and with a link for a baking sheet.
Like, hilarious. Like, please stop using that.
Sister woman, you have got that. That doesn't even need to go to Goodwill. That just needs to go straight to recycling. Yes. That needs to like bypass all human, all human contact, you know? So yeah, Melissa, yes, I have seen, it's amazing to me what people, you don't have to have the fanciest, biggest, bestest toys. You really don't, but you need to have some serviceable utensils and tools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Virginia, I have been following your personal journey with food and weight loss recently. I watched a Facebook Live that you did answering questions from people of how you did it. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that journey? And I loved that water was at the top of your list.
Oh yeah.
Can you explain that?
Yeah, sure. Well, thank you for watching and thank you for asking. And I'm glad that we're talking about it because I really feel strongly that someone like me, Southern born French trained chef, can lose 60 pounds, then I think that anyone can, right? And thank you. So it's hugely, hugely personal, right? Weight is one of the most touchy, personal, tear inducing, teeth gnashing, things. I decided a couple years ago, I just sort of hit a tipping point. I wound up having this really sort of major shaming moment with a media company, with a magazine that wanted to feature me, and they were really persistent about it. And then when I responded with the digits at the time, they ghosted me.
Really?
So they do you mind? They asked how much you weighed, and then you told
them.
Yeah,
it was a health magazine. Uh-huh. And they knew about Lighten Up Y'all, but they didn't know that life had happened since Lighten Up Y'all, right? And so I hadn't gained back all the weight that I lost with Lighten Up Y'all, but I had gained some of it back. And it was really interesting because they were very persistent about it. And they're like, we need your information for our lawyers, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, y'all, this isn't appropriate. It's not good for me right now. And my partner had cancer. Her parents had moved in with us, like all the things, right? It's like, eating. And anyway, they kept pushing. And so finally I responded with the information and it was crickets.
Wow.
And it really shamed me. There's no other way to say it. It really made me think about like my life and my career and what I'm doing. And it was kind of like, what are you doing? What are you doing? And it made me realize that I needed to lose some weight. And I never sought out with a certain number. I just wanted to be healthy and strong. So it wasn't like, oh, I want to be skinny or, oh, I want to be thin. It was, I want to be healthy and strong. And so that from the very beginning was my goal. And this started in early 2019. And so during that period of time, I had a lot more life happen. But instead of life getting in the way of my goal of being healthy and strong, I let life encourage me to keep at it. Mm. Right.
That's so important, because you can so quickly get derailed.
Oh, hell yeah.
When you know, you can be on that healthy train, healthy, and then something happens with a family member or something happens in your relationship and you just can veer off that path. So you stuck to it.
No, I did. And all that happened, right? That's when I moved back to Georgia. you know, my partnership changed, my home changed, my career, there was a lot affected because we worked together. So there was this huge thing. And that was like late of 2019. And then boom, the pandemic came around. Right.
Which so added to the confidence level. No, I'm just kidding. Yes. I mean, it, cause the, with the pandemic, our emotional response to things, the stamina of that has decreased dramatically. So that's just adding on top of everything else.
But what I thought about, y'all, was that with that, especially, I felt like I needed some guardrails. I felt, and that's what I call them. And I was just, I walk a lot. I walk as my primary exercise, although I do other things, but I walk every day, 3.5 miles to start my day. And, walking is my jam. Walking is it. It's about being in nature. It's about being outdoors. It is not in an internal track. It is about, you know, being outdoors and being in the beauty of the world. And so I was walking one day along the road and I noticed the guardrails, and it just occurred to me about how guardrails are meant from cars going off the road, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't drive off in the ditch. You might drive off the road, but at least you're not going to wind up in the ditch.
Right.
And not that I was scared that I was going to like literally wind up in the ditch or be so low that I was in the ditch, but I just, that became a metaphor for me. And I knew that for me to continue on this path of being healthy and strong, as well as be healthy for the pandemic and be healthy and keep my body and immune system in the best shape possible, that meant that I needed to eat right and only put good stuff in my body. I radically reduced the amount of alcohol intake, right? Like, it's like, I need to
Jen,
be clear.
I'm sorry.
I did the opposite, Virginia. I'm cleaning up my act now, but I did the opposite during the pandemic. Kidding. I did not exercise and eat right. I like drank more wine and ate more chocolate.
It's crazy. The statistics are crazy.
Yeah. So I'm impressed.
I'm just kidding. I didn't call her out. But you're saying, well, I want to talk a little bit about women's relationship with food. Cause Virginia, here you are, you know, having worked with food your whole life, helping other people work with food, and you still are able to use food as, I don't want to say a crutch, because I have a terrible sweet tooth. And so, when my son was born and my relationship broke up and my career was not where I wanted it to be, I ballooned, you know, and still have not gotten all that off. But I knew in my mind I had given up. I don't know. Why does it feel like when to be healthy and to do those things for some women is a struggle, and it's so easy to get into the comfort of just eating without doing anything else?
Oh gosh. I think it's because it's overwhelming, right? If you feel like, you know, it's just also overwhelming. If we look at like what the AMA says a woman of my height should be, right? And I'm still slightly above the official, like, American Medical Association of what a woman of my age at 5'6" should be. And that's where I would just have an aside and say that, you know, happiness can't be found in a number between your toes. So it's not about the numbers. But why is it so overwhelming? I feel like it's just because it's so daunting. I mean, the reality is it's really easy to put on weight, and the harsh, overwhelming, like looming reality is it's not easy to take off.
Right.
It's just not. And so, you know, one of the things that I try to tell people, though, is like, don't be defeated before you even start. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that that's the most important thing. And progress is progress. It doesn't have to be leaps and bounds. I think that, you know, Americans in general, where women, you know, women are no different, right? We want instant fixes. We want it I want to do X diet and it's going to lose 10 pounds in a week. Well, you could. It's not going to stay off.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And it goes back to what you said about, it goes back to what you said about healthy. And just one little follow-up is, back when Jen and I worked together, mm-hmm. one of the ways we met is because I was about to go through a kidney transplant and I had mm-hmm. been on dialysis and I was underweight because on dialysis, it's easier to go through if you're underweight. Ah. And so I was emaciated. But at the time, I'm sure a lot of people would have found me attractive more so than now, where I'm healthier than I mm-hmm. was then, but I look different. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to reiterate what you said about healthy. Healthy for you is, and I mean you in general, is to have energy, to be mm-hmm. happy, to when your body is working on all of its, cylinders, everything's going, you are joyful.
Right.
And when I was in terrible shape back then. So anyway, just, a body size does not equate to happiness or health. And for women, it seems like you have to be told over and over and over again, because these images of these models are what you're constantly being, mm-hmm. and that's not necessarily healthy.
No. And then I agree 10,000%. Like, y'all, if you look at actresses, it is not particularly normal to have that much bone showing in your shoulders,
right?
It's just, generally an underweight person. And conversely, I would say now I think it's really interesting because when I've posted things on social media about my weight loss, I've been accused of fat shaming myself, fat shaming other people. You know what? I'm not that. If someone is happy, if a woman, a man, if someone is happy at their weight, whether it be high or low, if they're happy and they're having a rich and fulfilled life, bravo, good for them. But if someone I'll stick with the overweight part because I think that that's more of what I can speak to. But if someone is overweight, it's entirely possible that they're using food to numb, right? They're using food as a stress release. Or alcohol or a myriad of things. Right. And so, but that's not happiness. Like using food as a coping mechanism isn't a healthy way to be. And so I just try to keep that in mind, in my own life.
I wanted to hear your tip about water because it was so impactful. And when you talked about it on your Facebook Live, it really stuck with me and has stuck with me ever since. So,
oh, good. Thank you. And thank you for looping back to that. So I think that what I try to do is that if I have a hunger urge, then I'll drink a glass of water. Before I start my day, I have a drink, a glass of water. Before I eat my lunch, I drink a glass of water. Before I eat my dinner, I drink, you get it, right? Like it's all about the water. If I'm feeling a little bit peckish in the middle of the afternoon and I feel like I need a snack, before I have a piece of fruit, I'll have a glass of water. I mean, I think that undoubtedly it's good for our bodies. I mean, someone has to drink an extraordinary amount of water to be over drinking water. And I think that typically we just under drink water. So there's so much of eating that is that numbing piece. There's so much of eating that is boredom. So many of us have been working from home. And whereas before, if you wanted a snack, it involved a little bit more effort. And now if you want a snack, it's moving from the dining room at the laptop to the kitchen and opening the door, right? It's super easy.
I feel seen, Virginia. Go ahead.
Oh, sister, honey. Yeah. I've got sticky notes all in my refrigerator, like drink water.
Yeah, I love everywhere. It. And you said, if you want to have a glass of wine, fine, have that glass of wine. But before you do, have that glass of water. And so really stuck with me is like to have the water before everything else. And I don't know why that little tip really was sticky to me, but it did.
No, I'm so glad. Well, the other thing is though, too, is I think that it's just some mindfulness of it, and like just understanding that it may be boredom, right? Or, like you said, you can still have that wine, but just have that glass of water first. And it's just putting better stuff in you.
Smart. Very smart.
I love it. I want to know also, how can we embrace the seasons with our meal planning and recipes? Because it's something you do so well.
Oh, thank you so much. So I think that that's the thing that's one of the most important things to me is, you know, being a Southerner, being someone that comes from an very intense food background. My mother's a great cook still. My grandmother was a great cook. My grandfather grew our own food. Like, I grew up in South Georgia, so food has been tremendously important to me my whole life. So even though I've losing this weight, lost this weight, and have a new mindset on what good food is, it still has to taste good. You know, deprivation is just misery, right? Yeah. So one of the better ways for food to taste good is to eat with the seasons, and to eat tomatoes when tomatoes are good and so delicious good. And juicy. And then in a couple months, it's going to be that kale and the collard greens and things like that. So I feel like that food just tastes better if you're eating with the seasons. It's more often more economical because it's not being shipped from halfway around the world because you're eating with at least a hemisphere season, right? And then even further, if we eat more regionally and eat with the seasons, then that food travels a lesser distance and it hasn't sat in a refrigerator or sat on a truck for longer, and it's also going to taste better. So in my mind, it's just the best way to eat, whether you're trying to lose weight, trying to gain weight, whatever. It doesn't matter to me about that part. Eating with the seasons is, in my mind, the best way to eat.
So as someone who represents those of us who are not confident cooks, but the holidays are coming up. Mm-hmm. You're talking about the season. I think of the seasons, then I think of fall, mm-hmm. and I think all these yep. parties and all these gatherings for the holidays. Is there like simple dishes that even people like me could be able to bring to a Thanksgiving gathering, a fall gathering, whether, you know, a Christmas gathering? Like, are there things that we should focus on instead of trying to go over the top and try to do big elaborate things?
Yes. Well, I would first of all say is that if someone's asking you to bring something, then that's a wonderful means of bringing you into the party, right? It's really a very inclusive gesture. And then for you to take something is a very community-minded, inclusive gesture. You're literally sharing food with someone. That is one of the most intimate acts we can possibly do, right? Is to share food. Mm-hmm. So if you're not
go to the grocery store and pick it up on the way. I'm trying to challenge people, right? To go to the deli.
Can't do that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, something's better than nothing. I would say that. But if you're going to do that, hell, I'd just say just take a bottle of wine. Right.
Right.
I mean, yeah. Why would you want like dried up old broccoli?
Right. That's true.
When you can have a Chianti or something, you know what I mean? Like why would you want that? So what I would suggest for people that are more challenged like that, though, you may not pick it up at the grocery store on the way over, but there's plenty of things that you can do that would be welcome on a holiday buffet. And if it's a matter of like, let's just pretend like, do you like Brussels sprouts?
I do, actually do.
Okay. So there you like Brussels sprouts. So mm-hmm. start with something that you like. I would suggest that look at some different recipes, look how complicated they are. Give one a try, don't try it, and then take it straight there. I would say the same thing for a hostess. Do not try a recipe for the first time that you're having guests over, right? Like give it a run through first. And then part of it is just practice. And I go back to that golf analogy. And this is something that my friend and mentor Natalie taught me. You know, when people are playing golf, they don't like run home and say, oh, I had a terrible golf game and I hit it in the sand trap. And then I went in the lake and then it took me 7 putts. Like no one does that. But then on the other hand, like you make a mistake in the kitchen or you burn your biscuits and you feel compelled to tell everybody. Right. Don't tell anybody. No one needs to know, you know. So I think that part of it would be practice. And then other things, I would stick to simple, right?
I like how you said about to look at the recipe and make sure it's not complicated. Now, mm-hmm. you know, I would probably naturally do that. But I think there's some people who feel the pressure, peer pressure, to have something that's, I need to compete against Jen at this buffet, you know, that our friends are having, where I know better than that. It's where it's okay for it to be simple, right? It will taste good if mm-hmm. you're able to do it that way.
No, and not only that, so I wouldn't say stop by and pick up a tired old crudité platter. at the deli on the way. But on the other hand, a nice charcuterie board, that's lovely, right? It doesn't have to be something cooked, and it doesn't have to be something that you've made yourself. There's a lot of wonderful places in Atlanta that you could pick up something on the way, and it would be just as meaningful.
Now, Virginia, Jen actually had to tell me not too long ago during this podcast what a charcuterie board was. I didn't know. So Google it if you don't know.
Sausage.
Take it to the party.
Sausage and cheese. Get yourself some sausage and cheese, y'all. Yeah.
Some pickles.
Yeah.
Good mustard. Yeah.
That's Melissa speak. That's my translation.
A relish platter. Would there that make more sense for you? A relish platter.
Yeah.
All right, Virginia, I want to switch gears a little bit and ask you about some of your celebrity experiences because you have been hands-on with Martha Stewart and Dwayne Johnson and all of these super famous people. So can you share with us a celeb story, like one of your favorites?
Oh, gosh. Oh, okay. I'm going to tell you what. I can't believe I'm going to tell you all this. Morgan Freeman tried to kiss me on the mouth.
Really? Okay. We need the background.
I was cooking with John Currents and Kelly English and Bill Smith, and we were doing an event in New York called the Big Gay Mississippi Dinner. And that was because it was years ago. And it was John Currents and Kelly English were very marriage equality forward, even being two sisters or straight men, right? Mm-hmm. And they asked me to take part in this, and it was a response to some draconian BS that Mississippi was doing, you know, on par for Mississippi. And anyway, so Morgan Freeman was the guest. It was so great. And I just was like so excited.
Because he's from Mississippi, right?
Yeah, and it was a big deal that Morgan Freeman was there, and everyone had a good time, and there was copious amounts of bourbon involved. And he was telling me how much he liked my dish, and he reached over to try to kiss me. And I was like, no.
Denied.
Denied.
Blocked. I mean, I can understand why he would want to, Virginia, but
you're kind. I thought it was radically inappropriate. And unfortunately, it sort of messed up the God voice for me, you know.
Oh, true. Yeah, yes. Morgan Freeman is God voice.
No,
yeah.
It was still a fun story. But I've gotten to meet just so many nice people, you know, cooking for them. When I was the kitchen director for Martha Stewart, we had celebrities all the time. So I got to hear Aretha Franklin sing and like, you know, 10 feet from me.
Wow.
And that was like amazing. Nothing I'd ever, I mean, that was just like a gift from God. And, you know, Jane Fonda is funny. And I can't think of anyone else right now, though. But, you know, it's just like, you know, everyone, the people that are the best, the celebrities are the best, and the people that they just feel like they're just like everybody else, because they are.
They're just people who love food as much as the rest of
us. Yeah, they are.
Yeah. And they know what a charcuterie board is.
Relish. They know what a relish platter is.
Relish.
Have you ever bombed in front of everybody? Have you ever made a big mistake in the kitchen?
Oh, heck yeah. Yes. I've forgotten flour in a cake that wasn't meant to be flourless. I have burnt things before. I've burnt things on like TV before. You know, I've, what else? I mean, when I was on Chopped, I was just praying that I wasn't going to like burn or cut myself. That was the main thing. It wasn't even about like winning or losing. It was just about like, please, dear Jesus, don't let me cut myself really bad, because you're terrified. It's terrifying. No, I've definitely bombed. But you know what? One of my episodes that I did just last week, actually, for Food Network Kitchen, they were like, well, you can have it flipped out if you don't want to do it on camera. And I said, no, let me do it. I said, it'll either work or it won't. And if it doesn't, then people will know and understand that it can happen to anybody. And I really do feel that way.
I appreciate that.
I really do. I very strongly feel that way. Chefs make mistakes all the time.
Because that's the point, is to connect with the audience, right?
Yeah. And it doesn't do any good. Like, oh, you can do this. And meanwhile, there's like, you know, 24 Pinterest fails off camera. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's all part of that sort of social media illusion. Like, oh, look, it's just so easy. And meanwhile, we all know it was like the 40th time they took that photograph or something. Mm-hmm. It's just not true.
when you talk about cutting yourself, like I, I may have had one or two kitchen injuries, but I don't know, what is your worst kitchen debacle? I mean, even if it's, it doesn't have to be on camera, but like personally, have you ever injured yourself in the kitchen?
I cut the tip of my thumb off in France.
Oh, there's your next book title.
Take a moment.
There's your next book title.
It was really intense. So, I was chopping, it was Bastille Day. I was chopping parsley for a potato salad. And I was at, I was working at the time at Chateau du Fay, a Ecole de Cuisine Lavarenne for Anne Willen, who wrote a book called Lavarenne Pratique. And she, her name is not as well known in the United States, but she opened Lavarenne, at the encouragement of James Beard and Julia Child. Very, very impactful person in terms of her proteges, right? Mm-hmm. So chopping parsley for Bastille Day, chopped the tip off. And I immediately, I've got a towel here. I immediately like grabbed my towel, right? And held it up in the air because that's what you're supposed to do. And I picked up the bit and I went, Jen, the bread, Jen, have a sip of water. I think it's time for you to have some water.
Okay.
So I picked up the bit and I went into Anne's office and I said, Anne, I've cut myself. And she was English and she said, oh dear. I said, let me see. I said, no, ma'am, I can't show you. And she kind of raised her eyebrows. She's a lot like the queen and she's not quite as old as the queen, but getting up there. And very proper English lady. And I said, no, ma'am, I can't. She goes, Virginia, let me see. And I said, no, ma'am, I can't. I mean, I knew it was bad. And she finally, on the third time she asked me, she said, Virginia, I'm not asking you again. Let me see. And I just held up my thumb. I held up my hand with the thumb in it. And I said, well, here it is. And she went, oh, dear. I think we need a cognac. Oh.
Seriously.
And now she went to the bar and poured us two cognacs, which, of course, is a terrible idea when you've cut yourself because alcohol is a blood thinner, but it tasted delicious at the time.
Gosh. And what do you do at that point? Do you go to the hospital? Do you sew
it
back on?
No, we took it to the hospital on ice and everything. And then, but Tony Bennett left his heart in San Francisco and my thumb was left in France.
So do you,
best
do you,
story ever. You, oh my God.
Do you put a prosthetic on it? Do you?
No, it's just a tip. And over, you know, that was 27 years. That was a long time ago, more than 20 years ago.
Does it grow back like a, you know?
It grows back.
Like an octopus's leg? Is
the tip Yeah. The human body is an amazing thing. It really is.
Oh my God.
No.
The thumb bit. I love that.
Yeah.
Crazy story. Okay. As a Southern woman, you know, we all take food when something goes wrong. So what is your go-to dish to take to a friend who's going through a tough time?
So it's a little specific, but I do have a recipe in Bon Appetit, y'all, that I call funeral grits.
Okay.
And it is a cheese grits casserole because, gosh, you know, what more could be good when you're sad than like a bowl of comfort food? Mm-hmm. What more could be good for you when you're upset and like, you know, cheesy goodness? And then I think that, you know, like a cheese gets good hot, you can reheat it. It's like this indestructible beast of food. Like you can reheat it on a paper plate in the microwave. So I wanted to call it funeral grits. And my, you know, I can't remember what school she went to. I think she went to Harvard, literally. Some Ivy League school. She lived in Oakland and she didn't want it, San Francisco, and she didn't want to call it funeral grits. And I argued with her about it. So anyway, if I had to take something to someone who needed some love in a bowl or on a plate, I think my first inclination would be a cheese grits casserole.
I'm going to call it funeral grits.
Funeral grits. She didn't let you call it that in the book.
She did. I won.
Oh, you won. Awesome.
I won. She didn't want to win, but I did. I kept at her.
There's an odd regional thing I noticed. Like I grew up, you know, with understanding death and going to a lot of family gatherings as such. And like Jen said, bringing stuff and sitting with the family. We just feast. You know, but I noticed that there have been people from other regions who I don't know. Like I may be generalizing, but yeah, it seems like Southerners tend to have more of a, I don't know, some kind of event. It's an event for us.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe, I don't know. The Irish are famous for their wakes, but I guess there's a lot more booze involved. I mean, I think that,
all comes back to alcohol.
I know it all comes back to alcohol. No.
I just think that there's a legitimacy to you because you're a Southerner, but also just because you are so comfortable with food and grew up with food and you can talk food, and you just make it something that is applicable to anybody. It's not just something that the elite can enjoy. It's something, you know, that everybody can participate in. Like you said, it's the most intimate thing you can do with someone is share a meal with them. And I don't know. I'm biased to Southerners because I believe that we really, really make a big deal about that.
Yeah, we do. And I think that you're exactly right. And I think that one of the reasons, though, is that food is so important to us is because we're a garden. You know, we have we can't underestimate the importance of this veritable 12-month growing season that we have down south, right? I mean, there is something coming off a tree or out of the ground nearly 12 months out of the year. And we've always been a very agriculturally driven society. Mm-hmm. And even more so, we've always been a very agriculturally driven economy, which means that we've always been one of the poorest parts of the country. So if we wanted to eat it, we had to grow it.
Right. So true. Now, Virginia, most recently in the Washington Post, they featured your Southern tomato sandwich. And the photos of this, y'all, if your mouth doesn't water, there is something wrong with you. Okay. It looks so good. What is your secret to the best Southern tomato sandwich?
So this is the thing, right? Is a tomato sandwich in the summertime for me is squishy white bread.
Yep.
Squishy white bread. I love sourdough. I love artisan bread. I love baguette, but not for the, with a capital T, tomato sandwich. Right. So squishy white bread, mayonnaise, and I do have some opinions about mayonnaise, a nice thick slice of tomato, salt and pepper, and that's it. No bacon, no lettuce. That's a different sandwich altogether. You know, no aioli, no basil, just mayonnaise bread and a tomato.
All right, so what's the sermon on mayo? Come on, give it to us.
Well, there's this whole thing about Duke's mayonnaise, right? And I love Duke's mayonnaise. I grew up with Duke's mayonnaise. And then there's this sort of division. Is it Duke's or is it Hellman's? And then several years ago, I started using just mayo, which is a vegan mayonnaise. I'm not vegan. I'm an omnivore. But I started using this vegan mayonnaise and I really like it. And so that was my sort of like heresy when I told Joe Yonan at the Washington Post that I used vegan mayonnaise on my tomato sandwich. You wouldn't believe. You would not believe the emails I got.
Well, when it you said like, Duke's, I was getting prickly at Duke's because I grew up with Hellman's and Sunbeam bread. So yeah,
everybody's very particular.
I know that sandwich. That's a pot stirrer. Right.
It's supposed to bring us together. People bring us together. Right?
But people, I think it's so, I think the reason that I feel so strongly about it and that people feel so strongly about it is that it's a food memory, right? We didn't, when I was 54 years old, I didn't grow up with sourdough in Montezuma, Georgia. No. Right.
Yeah.
And there weren't any heirloom tomatoes back then. It was mayonnaise, bread, salt and pepper. And, or there were, but there weren't as of course prevalent. So it's a food memory that's very attached.
Right. Going to Giant Foods in Columbia, Tennessee and get my Sunbeam bread. And my dad grew the tomatoes. And
I grew up in Florida. It was Winn-Dixie.
There you go.
Winn-Dixie.
I went to school with.
Yes, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say Teresa Randolph was the Sunbeam girl. She went to school at University of Georgia. She's a real person.
Oh, really?
I did not know that.
Isn't that crazy?
I didn't either. That's crazy.
Isn't that crazy? Real person.
Well, I am excited to talk about Food Network Kitchen and your current project going on there. And then we've got to ask you the Frenzy Five. So first tell us what you're doing with Food Network Kitchen right now. This is so cool.
So exciting. So Food Network Kitchen is the digital streaming platform for Food Network. So Food Network is available on the typical cable, but as we all know, media is changing every minute, it seems. And it's a streaming platform. So it's available on your television, on your laptop, on your iPad, on your phone. It's a streamable channel called Food Network Kitchen. And the cool thing is there are live cooking classes, which is, I think, just fascinating, right? But that we have the technology now that I am able to teach a live cooking class on the internet to the world via the Discovery Channel, right? Like via the Discovery Scripts Network. I'm doing some of those. And I also recorded a whole series of how to can, pickle, and preserve for them as well. So I'll be doing regular classes and additional video for them, curated content for them. And just really excited about the opportunity to share some real Southern recipes with people, not solely what people perceive Southern food to be.
Awesome.
All right. So cool. I'm signing up today.
No pressure. I have to take these lessons. All right. You know what? I'm going to take them with my son, though. See, the thing is, I have, like I said, a six-year-old son. And my thing is, look, I think a man needs to know how to cook.
Yep.
And I also don't think that you should pass down things to your child that you wouldn't want to, which is I don't want him to be like me and not know how to cook for himself. So we'll both take those classes together.
Yay.
All right. So now it's time for the Frenzy Five, Virginia. Okay. Now there's no pressure. It's just rapid fire questions.
Okay.
First comes to your mind. The first question is, where is your cozy happy place?
The pond.
I love the pond. And there's that image, right? There's that Monet image. All right.
Yeah. Mine has a fishing pole involved. Sorry.
As it should. And overalls. All right. What's your favorite framed thing in your home?
My James Beard Award.
Nice. Very nice. What is your most memorable birthday?
Oh, I have a terrible birthday. It's between Christmas and New Year's. And so birthdays are always these weird things. But I did spend a very wonderful birthday in Paris 1 year. And that was supreme.
Nice. What'd you do?
Ate lots of delicious food and drank lots of beautiful wine.
Nice. I love it.
And looked at her fingertips and says, look, I have two fingertips here. So that makes you a Capricorn, right?
That's right. Goat.
All right. All right. What's a daily routine or ritual that you stick to?
I walk every day.
And what fashion trend did you jump on? Any era, any age?
I've been wearing the same red lipstick since like 1985. Not kidding. My mother's always worn Chanel, and I had an event to go to. I was in high school, obviously. And they did my makeup, and it was Star Red.
Okay, I was about to ask, what is the name?
The name of the color has changed multiple times since then, but I have almost exclusively worn red lipstick. But that goes back to Capricorn. Capricorns don't like change.
Well, I mean, if it works, it works, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Sweet. I'm like Chanel.com. What's it called right? Now? It's so pretty. Well, Virginia, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been such an awesome conversation, and I hope you'll come back again and keep us posted on what you're up to.
I will. Thank you so much for having me all. I've really had a great time, and I just think y'all are the best.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you so much. Y'all follow at Virginia Willis on Instagram and Facebook. You can find out more at virginiawillis.com and also go find her on Food Network Kitchen. Okay, Melissa Carter, Virginia talked about food memories. So I've got to know your answer to this question. What is a favorite food memory for you?
Well, you know, I've talked on the show before about how I was diagnosed with irritable bowel syndrome at 7 years old. I was just telling Jen off air that, you know, my son is in first grade now. He had asked me, how was first grade for you? And I was like, you know, it wasn't so good because I missed a lot of school. It was very painful. And the reason I say that is because that kind of, it changed my relationship with food because for me, food made me feel bad. Oh. And so, you know, that may be, you know, I tease a lot about, you know, and I tease with Virginia about how I don't cook and it's not my thing. But, you know, looking back, I think it's because food to me wasn't something that was a good thing. It was a bad thing. However, I think one of the other reasons, like I mentioned to Virginia, that I bake is because my favorite food memory is mom teaching me how to bake cakes. So being in the kitchen with my mother and just the time with her. I think that for me, and I'm sure for everybody else, I mean, you talk about memories. Sometimes it's not about the food itself. It's about what you did or where you were to prepare it, like, you know, how it made you feel to prepare it. And so it said, you, we had a 70s, you know, ranch house with a big long kitchen. It wasn't a big square kitchen. It was rectangular. And we'd always have to bump into each other and pass each other to go get the different ingredients and stuff. But my mother just put a stool down and had me sit there and we just talked and she walked me through baking a cake. And so from elementary school through high school, I baked with her. And that was that to me. Baking with Millie Pete was my favorite food memory. I mean, there's not just one. Red velvet cake was what she always made for my birthday.
Oh, wow.
Because she, so red velvet cake wasn't made popular until Jacqueline Kennedy would make it in the White House. And so my mother was so impressed by the Kennedys and she loved Jacqueline, I think, that she would bake these red velvet cakes. And I said, well, I want that as my birthday cake. So every year she made me a red velvet cake for my birthday. So,
sweet.
Yeah. So that's
I
baking.
I love that. I can just picture you and your mom in your 70s kitchen. Was there like either mustard yellow?
Wasn't the green. It was the mustard.
Countertop. I was going to say
countertop.
Mustard yellow or that like pea green, right?
We had the pea green plates.
Of course. Of course.
We had the ceramic pea green plates, but we had the mustard countertops. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
I can picture it with y'all with your aprons on, yes. Flour everywhere.
So cute.
What a great memory. So, I love that.
So what about your memory? What's your favorite food memory?
I have a great food memory. It's also with my mom and my brother in the kitchen. My mom, one year, this is mid 80s, got a fresh pasta maker for a gift. Ooh. I don't know if it was for Christmas she got it, but she got really into making pasta from scratch with this pasta maker. And I can just remember my brother and I with her, like, you know, creating the dough because you made the, you know, the dough for the pasta and then you fed it through this machine and you could put different attachments to get different kinds of pasta to come out of it. And it would start pushing out and then we would get to slice it for the right length.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we could make regular spaghetti or we would make linguine or she even made like bow tie pasta and it was all from scratch.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah. She doesn't do it anymore. I mean, it was like a phase in the, you know, she had a phase in the 80s and I just remember it being so much fun and I can picture it today and I can still smell it, like the smells of that pasta and the pasta cooking and just how good it was to eat later and how fun it was that we were a part of making it. I'm sure we just made it harder for her in the kitchen.
I was about to say, we actually
really helped.
Yes. Well, that's the thing too. I think that, you know, I'm mindful. And I think that's being an older parent, but I'm mindful of the fact that even though it would be faster for me to do things, and I am guilty so many times because I'm, you know, like I mentioned, I'm the one, the plan, the grid, like I like to keep on time and that kind of thing. So there's so many times that I will do things and not include my son because it's faster. But then right. I'm mindful of that. And I'm like, no, wait a second. You got to slow down and let him help because it is important for me for him to be an independent man in the kitchen. And so like for his birthday, because I, much like my mother, I make my son's cake every year. So I don't allow Katie to go to the store or her mother to go to the store to get his cake. I make it at home from scratch and I have him help me do it. So I'll have him crack the eggs. Right?
He'll always remember that. Yeah, even if it does take longer and it always makes a bigger mess. Like when I'm in the kitchen with my kids recently, the girls and I made some homemade chocolate chip cookies and oh my gosh, the kitchen was just destroyed afterwards, but they had the best time.
Yeah.
You know, and then they're off to the next thing. Okay, bye mom, tell us when they're done. And
exactly. Like, they don't care anymore.
In the kitchen looking around going, what? Yeah. Well, how did this how did this tornado happen?
But in 30 years, they'll tell the story of baking chocolate chip cookies with mom, even though in the moment, and that's the other thing is having the foresight to understand that in the moment, the kid is not going to seem like they care. Like in the moment, they'll, you know.
That's true.
Yeah, you know, but then you have to remember that you did imprint something on them. Did I tell my mother just how wonderful she was and how wonderful she was in the kitchen at 8 and 9 and 10 years old, at 15, 16, 17? No, but those were something that, yeah, I don't forget. And I want to continue that with my son. So even for me, who is kitchen challenged, I understand the importance of, no matter how busy you are, and even if you're not a great cook or a great baker, whatever it is, like, you know, even if it's just, you know, making lemonade or whatever it is you do in the kitchen, something in the kitchen that is special between you and your child, or your grandchild, I think is really an important thing to do.
Totally. And because we got the image of your mom's 70s kitchen, I'm just going to paint the 80s kitchen.
Yes, 80s, okay. Yes.
There was wallpaper on the wall, of course, because everybody had wallpaper in the 80s. We had a trash compactor.
Oh, yes.
Do you remember those that used to smush your garbage down?
Forgot. Yes.
And our hamster used to always get out of the cage and crawl behind there. So we'd have to take the whole trash compactor out of the wall to find our little hamster.
What was your hamster's name?
Fivalette.
Fivalette.
Do you remember that movie in the 80s, American Tale?
Yes.
With the lead character that was Fival?
Yes.
Well, we couldn't have Fival because our hamster was a girl. So we had Fivalette.
Fivalette. Okay, now it makes sense. Mm-hmm. I was like, Fivalette. That is so random. Okay, Fivalette,
so
yes.
Bizarre. But yeah, Fivalette used to get behind the trash compactor. And also in my mom's 80s kitchen was a telephone on the wall with a real long cord.
Yes.
It would stretch across the whole length because we also had a long rectangular kitchen. And I remember my brother and I chasing each other or playing like gotcha last or whatever and getting tangled up in that phone cord.
And the way you untangle is you had to hold it up and let it spin. Because, you know, that sometimes became my job. Hey, you know, when it was all like crunkled up and up, when the cord is up toward the bottom of the phone, you know that it's really tangled.
So unwind it. Yep.
It was my job to stand there and just hold it and then hear the
I'm telling you, these are only memories that people our age are going to have.
So the art of
my kids don't know what they would be like, why did the phone have to have a cord? That's ridiculous.
The art of doing that was to hold it and hold on the wall, hold the thing so it wouldn't make the sound as you unwound it. Oh my gosh. Cause I had, you know, I do a rabbit hole here, but so, we have a pool where I live in a townhome community. We have a pool. We take advantage of the pool. And so this summer I thought, oh, how cool would it be to get some underwater shots? That would be fun game. So I found an inexpensive camera online that takes underwater shots. So I sent one of those pictures to a friend of mine. And my friend said, oh, what kind of phone is that? I need that in my life. And I was like, it's not a phone. I got it. I said in the text, I got an old school camera.
It's an actual camera.
It's an actual camera.
We're filming it. And you got to take it to the pharmacy, to the, you know, to the photo lab to get the pictures printed out.
And then you see how many times you put your finger in front of the lens when you had to get your film developed. I took a vacation to Arizona a few years ago and I use an old school, you know, film, roll the film up in the manual camera.
Ooh.
And I had to find, there's like one place that you could send those film to get developed now. Like
nobody
I had to search.
It.
Nobody has the capacity to develop film anymore. Anyway.
All right. Wormhole from your wormhole. Do you ever have a panic attack that like, Apple or, you know, Samsung or whoever your phone is with is going to all of a sudden like get hacked, disappear, and then all your photos will be gone?
Well, I back
those,
them
like,
up.
Heart palpitations.
I back them up on Dropbox. So they don't sponsor them, but I always back those photos up on another platform. Now why? Because I also thought, what am I going to do with them? Like, okay, someday this company's going to go out of business. Someday this storage company's going to go out of business.
Right.
Like I need to, it probably cost me $10,000 to print every photo.
Every photo that's in there.
And
right?
Then what
it's
am
like
I going to do with
it?
Look, Jen, I've got a bin in my garage of photos from back in the, from elementary school through college, through my 20s. That I don't know what to do with. They're not in photo albums. They're just loosely in there. And I keep thinking, oh, I've moved them 8 freaking times. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to do something with it. What am I going to do? Why do I have Wendy Wilson's third grade picture still in my bit? What am I going
to You Wendy, might want it.
Wendy
you
Wilson, bless her heart.
It.
She has passed on. She's no longer with us. And I still have her picture that she gave me in exchange. And, you know, because we used to give those little pictures, little itty bitty pictures we exchange. And I'm like, what am I doing? What am I going to do with Tracy Tyler? What am I going to do with Tracy Tyler's, you know, senior photo? What am I going to do with that?
Maybe, but
I
still have it. For her funeral, because you'll be the only one that has it.
Hey, guys, look, look. I have the picture to put on her coffin. I mean.
How many moves have all these pictures been through?
Like I said, eight. I think I've in Atlanta, I think I've moved eight times in my tenure here. But that doesn't include college. And from college, I mean, I've moved these pictures. So anyway, to answer your question, Jen, who cares? Because the thing is, you're not going to keep those pictures for 50 years.
I think what I do need to do, though, to like, these are the dumb things that keep me up at night. If I wake up in the middle of the night, I'm like, what if Apple goes under? What if all the baby pictures are gone? I haven't made baby books for my children. I'm a horrible parent because they just live on the internet. And I'm like, they'll be fine. That'll be fine. No, it's not going to be fine. I need to make baby books. And then I get all overwhelmed by it. And I'm like, I don't have time and I don't know how I'm going to do it. And I just start losing it.
Katie's friend, one of Katie's friends, I thought was brilliant back in the day. She would make a picture album, you know, through, I don't know, Apple or Shutterfly or whoever. Again, none of these are sponsors.
Yeah, her real organized friend who's on top of everything. Well, I hate her friend already.
So every year she had two sons and she would do that. So I thought I'm going to be like her. I'm going to be just like her. Right. And this is at the time that Katie and I were expecting something. Oh, you know what? I got this handle because Katie sure as hell is not going to do it. So I'm like, I'll do this. And so I started the baby book that it was the 0 year book. Right. Because I was going to do every year of Mr. Carter's life. I still have 0 year up on Shutterfly is one of my projects because I'm missing one picture that 6 years later, I have forgotten to go back and put that picture in. And did I do book 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6? No.
No, see, this is why we're friends, because
I still have zero.
Okay with me. Because you have been like, I have been doing it every single year and it's all done and it's all on the shelf and they all match and it's got the same color branding, I would have been like, I hate you. We can no longer do the frenzy together.
In my mind, it's there. And somehow it doesn't translate into I don't manifest it in the universe. But anyway, but yeah, so all that has to do with memories of your kitchen.
Yes. Okay. Wait. So here's another question for you, because our family histories are so closely woven with food, right? It's where we're from. You know, those traditions that are passed down through generations are so important. So I wanted to know a treasured family recipe from the Carter's kitchen. Was there something that came from your grandparents? Was there,
you know what? I'll be honest and say that I don't have an answer because I didn't care at the time. Mm. So, because I my sister cared and she was much better. My brother and sister actually are much better cooks than I am. And my sister probably has some cherished stuff, but I will tell you that's what's cherished from my mother, you know, my father didn't cook much, but he could cook and he would cook catfish. So anytime we had catfish, that was my father in the kitchen, which was really fun to watch him. He would take his shirt off because he was a sweater. So he had his shirt off and a towel around his shoulder and he was cooking catfish and it was really cute.
So cute.
But mom, one of the things she did, because she was very old school. She was born in 1929. So she's the age of most people's grandparents was. And she, for my son, when he was born, drew out on this big piece of paper, she would write things for my son and how to paint because she was a painter. And then she would, you know, and then she had this big thing and I laminated all these things, right? I got a laminating machine. But I have it somewhere near me, but it's mom's handwriting and it's a big dinner plate. And it shows my son where all the silverware is supposed to go, which cup is his, you know, the place setting. She showed it and I'll have to find it here in a second, but she, yeah.
It's like Millie Pete's cotillion class.
Exactly. And so and she gave it to me and I think she was just sketching it out and she gave it to me and she was just, you know, but I kept it and I laminated it and it's big enough. She put it on a big enough piece of paper to where he could put it on the table and put the plate there and put the silverware there. So to answer your question, it's not a recipe, but it's just the importance of, and Virginia said this too, the importance of being able to serve and know what you're doing. So having a serving set and knowing where to put the plates, I think is what, for me, is the lesson I got from my mother more so than the actual recipe.
And she'd be so proud and her mother would be so proud that that's what That's what landed with you and with your son, and that it's gone through the generations. I love that.
They're going to be thank God, because she's not real good at it. So I'm glad that she got something. That's what they're saying right now, is collectively like, whoo, maybe she'll be okay after all. She's not quite the girl that we thought she'd be, but you know what? She's going to be all right.
She's going to make it.
She's going to make it. All right. She can keep the family name.
One of our family traditions came from my grandmother, Dee Dee, whose name was Dorothy Constance, and she was actually born in Great Britain. So she was dual citizenship. Her father was an American and her mother was a Brit. And so she had a couple of recipes that got passed down through the generations. One are these pastries called Maids of Honor. Doesn't that sound quite British?
It does.
And they are so delicious. They're like a cake filled, like a pastry bottom with like a raspberry jam. And then on top of it, a cake filled, and then they were iced on top. And so they're very complex to make, but Dee Dee made those every year. And
I've not seen that on the Great British Baking Show, but I would like to, because I'm fascinated how in Britain, like you said, that there's the fruits are incorporated, you know, into food and baking more so than. I don't use fruits in my baking. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I'm not really a baker. You know, like we talked about, I like the cooking aspect much more than baking, because it is so much more precise. And I have tried to recreate the Maids of Honor a lot of different times. It's usually around Dee Dee's birthday in January. I'll try to make Maids of Honor. And my cousin Casey is always saying like, well, you got close. but in a sweet and endearing way, like nobody can quite make them the way that she made them. And she used to make them in these little antique tins. So I can't find the tins anymore. I've looked online, I've looked on Etsy, and they're not really made in the same way. And the only ones that I've found have been on like, you know, swap meet type websites where they look rusted and you probably shouldn't put food in it.
Right.
But she made them in these little, pretty little tins. Anyway, so that's a recipe that I'm trying to recreate. But you know, now everything is silicone and different shapes, and it doesn't really. Maybe I'm just not a great baker. It doesn't turn out in the same way that hers did. And she did it all by memory. So that is a regret that I have, is that I didn't ask her to write it down and show me step by step. And I didn't ask her to write down the recipe. I mean, she was somebody that just had it in her head.
Wow.
And she would just make them every year around the holidays. So I'm going to try to make some Maids of Honor again this year, and I'll share them with you and see what you think. If you
absolutely
give me the stamp of approval. And the other thing she made was this cake that we make still. And my mother has gotten very good at making it. And honestly, it's just in our family called the cake. It has like nuts and raisins and all kinds of things in it, but it's a holiday cake and it's delicious. And there's not even a name for the flavor. It's just in our family called the cake. Aww. But I do have that exact recipe because my mom learned it, memorized it, and then I've made my mom write it down.
Well,
great memories.
Yes. Well, I mean, I remember our church released a recipe book for fundraisers. It seems like back then there's a lot more recipes that were fundraising and stuff. And I regret not having a copy of that now.
And every family has their stories, you know, wherever your heritage is from, food comes right along with that. You know, my husband, on one side, his grandparents, immigrated from Cuba and Puerto Rico. So there's these great recipes of black beans and rice that sit all day and, you know, the black beans simmer and all these amazing spices. And then on the other side, his mom is from Illinois, very Midwestern. And one of our first Thanksgiving together, he said, my mom's going to bring the salad. And I was like, oh, cool. Salad. I checked that off the list. Don't need to get the greens. And it showed up and it was like Jell-O.
Jell-O salad. Yes. And some of those are really good.
I was like, that's not salad. in their family history. It's part of what's on the table. And if it's not there, something is missing for them. So, you know, I have learned not to scoff at that salad, but I've also learned to buy lettuce for a different salad. And then we can have the Jell-O salad.
Oh,
well,
no.
That cracked me up. I was like, what?
What's funny is for you, it's going to be like, well, Jen's bringing the salad and other people are like, oh, but that's the vegetable salad.
We got the veggies.
Because mom would make a Jell-O salad that was three-tiered.
Yeah, and then yeah.
Would have like a sour cream kind of thing in between the layers. Anyway, my sister tried to recreate. It's funny you say that. I forgot about that. So my sister, once my mother started falling ill, tried to make that and it never sat right. You know, like she was frustrated because she was trying to figure it out. Because
aren't there like chunks of pineapple in it somewhere?
There's chunks of pineapple on one level, and then on mom's other level, I think there were walnuts. And there's nuts in it. And then and then she would mix the nuts into this cream. Anyway, I mean, it's so good.
I'm telling you, you got to go back to Columbia, Tennessee and get that Sunday school recipe cookbook from the church. Because I bet it's got a whole bunch of salad recipes
in it. But not the salad you like.
Not the kind of salad I was looking for that Thanksgiving spread. But that's okay.
Hilarious. So here is a reminder to share your story. I mean, think about how our stories made you think of your own story. So share those. Open up about what you have been through, the memories you have in the kitchen with trusted friends. Your story matters. Jen has this week's mirror mantra.
This week, we're keeping it short and sweet. Are you ready?
Yes.
Look in the mirror.
Got it.
If I am what I eat, I'm going to put good stuff in there.
Oh,
right? We hear that all the time. You are what you eat. You are what you eat. If I am what I eat, I'm going to put good stuff in there and feel better about it. So say that once or twice in the mirror this week, or say it when you open the fridge. If I am what I eat, I'm going to put good stuff in there.
Say it to yourself when you go to the grocery store as you're purchasing things to put in your fridge.
That's right.
My problem is if it's in the house, it's in my mouth.
Yeah.
So I'm not the one who has the discipline to not eat like, you know, my son's stuff. Thank goodness he doesn't like chocolate or I would be in serious trouble. If I am what I eat, I'm going to put good stuff in there. I love it. Is there a friend of yours who would enjoy this episode? Please share it with her. On Apple Podcasts, this is what you do. You look for the three dots at the top right corner. You click on them. Then in the drop-down menu, select share episode. Then select the green message option and you can text it to a friend. You can always email us at melissa@thefrenzy.com or jen@thefrenzy.com if you need a follow-up or a step-by-step instructions for that.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought that up, because if you have a question for Melissa or for me about the Frenzy, maybe a suggestion of a topic you'd love for us to cover, please reach out. Like she said, melissa@thefrenzy.com or jen@thefrenzy.com. We would absolutely love to hear from you. And we'd love for you to check out our Frenzy YouTube channels. It's got videos and extended interviews. Plus, please sign up for our weekly email so we can send the episode right to your inbox. We include links to things that we discuss and give you some deeper insights into the topics we cover. So sign up today at thefrenzy.com.
And here is a shout out to the listeners who have subscribed to our email list at thefrenzy.com. They are Sierra Reese, Ute Puckett, and Gabrielle Duke. Thank you so much. The Frenzy is hosted and produced by the Melissa Carter and the Jen Hobby.
Sound editing by Bo Johnson.
People said, are you the Melissa Carter? Well, yeah. Original soundtrack produced by Tammy Hurt. For placement music written and recorded by Mark Daniels.
The Frenzy celebrates friendships over 40. So thank you so much for spending your time with us. That is the best gift you can give us.
Until next week, trust your guts.
Share your story.
Stop
lying about your age.
See you next time. Get in the kitchen.